shiny, melting your heart of stone. I'm out to get you on a slow boat to China.
What am I yelling about? I got the job.
You myself. On a boat.
That was Dean Martin doing Slow Boat to China. I started with that because I was just recently rewatching The Master. Philip Seymour Hoffman's really good in that. And even if I'm never quite sure if that movie is connecting the dots it needs to in scenes like the one where Philip Seymour Hoffman sings that song to Joaquin Phoenix, it is quite a sticky film. It's memorable. Yeah. So we returned to the conversation with Joe, Nick, and Katie, and myself, Nathaniel, and we were talking about Precursor Season, and we're starting off with The Master. I did want to ask you guys your opinions on the very strange precursor roller coaster ride of The Master and Beasts of the Southern Wild, and what we think it portends for Oscar, because honestly, it's so completely a toss-up for me for how those movies are going to do on January 10th.
I don't think the precursor ride for The Master has been strange at all. Like, I think that critics, especially some critics, but critics in general, loved that movie. Audiences didn't. I mean, more people went to it than you would imagine would because of the director, but it's a completely stymieing movie in a lot of ways and wants to be. So I think for something that's that kind of angular and challenging, even with the kind of critical support that it's got, but even within critics groups, it's not enough of a consensus favorite that a lot of, you know, leave out LAFC and most of them haven't really gone for
That's
it. Like,
true.
I would imagine that it would be really subject to kind of uneven showings in different places. I think the only thing that's kind of weird about it is sort of that Philip Seymour Hoffman always shows up, but I think that has to do with that category more than, I mean, what
well,
the hell
and him.
Yeah, it's like he's kind of had that spot marked out for him, and no one has really bothered to take him out of it. Like, Alan Arkin is doing the same thing. I mean, Argo's still more popular, but like, because the supporting actor is so interesting, but
well,
they keep hanging onto these spots.
Arkin's riding on the strength of that character, and that he's playing a superstar movie producer. Like, this is not a huge surprise to me.
Well, and it's an in joke, you know, and they do love
right.
They do love those in joke performances, like Dustin Hoffman and Wag the Dog, and.
Yeah,
I will say I thought The Master might do better with the actors just because, like Joaquin Phoenix especially, just because I would think if for an actor watching Joaquin Phoenix in The Master is something like watching a lottery winner collect their big giant check.
Yeah.
It's just like, look at all the acting he gets to do with that. That's amazing. Like, that's just got to be like the fantasy there. And I mean, I think Best Actor is a really tight six-person race, so he very well might have missed out on that last spot by, like, you know, a small fraction.
But I also think that, I mean, this is my own feelings about The Master, and sort of about There Will Be Blood, but I've probably said this before, I still think it's so weird that when this amazing choreographer of huge, vivid, I see everybody in my movie ensembles starts making movies about basically one person who gets to do tons of acting, that, like, you get into the rest of the movie and it's like you can't see almost anybody else. Like, There Will Be Blood, anybody in that movie who's not Daniel Day-Lewis is like, I don't understand who that is. And
right.
The Master has, I think, a lot of that problem. So I actually wonder if those people feel like they're watching somebody that they don't like very much get a huge lottery check and then are wondering why nobody else actually gets to put up a fight against him.
That's true. Well, and when you can cast Laura Dern as, like, your sixth lead or whatever, and I don't give a shit, like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge problem. And I think you're right. And that was a lot of my dissatisfaction with There Will Be Blood.
I do think you could have had all of those, like, smaller roles in that movie be more sort of reflective of your theme than he allowed them to be, because I do think it's, Nick's totally right, that he has something about him has shifted as a filmmaker that I'm a little upset about, because even though I love him, because I have always been really into filmmakers who saw the entire ensemble. And one of the reasons I used to love him is how much he sort of idolized Robert Altman and how much I could see that in his work.
Yeah. Well, you even look at something like Magnolia, which had its characters that were sort of like bent, faded men, basically, mm-hmm. who's like that society has forgotten and are also propping up in different ways, like Tom Cruise's character, but also Jason Robards' character. But like, those weren't the only ones he cared about. Like, he really, you know, that was a wide scope of, well, there was Melora Walters and there was Julianne Moore, and like, mm-hmm. those characters got just as much care and attention. I guess Punch Drunk Love sort of started narrowing it to one type of character, that disaffected, out of his place, out of his world male.
Mm-hmm.
I love The Master. I hear what you guys are saying about the ensemble, but I think...
Okay, sorry.
Well, I think what kind of makes it work for me and makes it more, like, in some ways more interesting than There Would Be Blood is because it kind of digs into this one relationship at the middle. Like, it's about Joaquin Phoenix's character, but it's about that push and pull relationship with Lancaster Dodd that keeps drawing me back to it. So I think I'm more interested in that character because of the way he sets up this relationship rather than kind of railing against the world, which is what part of the movie is about. But when you start bringing up Magnolia and the roles he had for women earlier on and how he just basically does not bother with actresses anymore, like Amy Adams' part in The Master, she does well, but it's not really a big part, or it's not like there's not much in there for her. That's kind of depressing. But I still think Joaquin Phoenix can get in.
I think he's great. I wish you would. Yeah.
I mean, it might be wishful thinking.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic.
I don't understand how Denzel Washington is hanging in there so tightly.
They love him.
I guess so.
Actors love him. People in the movie business love him. He's made a ton of people a ton of money. Like, it's not super surprising.
Well, and can we just... I know we already discussed Flight, but he's also really great in the movie, I think.
Yeah. But the movie is such a non-factor otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's John Hawks that I'm surprised is still hanging in there. Like, I think I thought that movie didn't sort of light it up at the box office in quite the way that I think a Sundance movie usually needs to do, or else it needs to have critics really behind it in a Winter's Bone way.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't quite say that about The Sessions either. I think, Nathaniel, you wanted to talk about people who have been doing really well through these precursors that might sort of drop out at the last minute. I've kind of been wondering about him a little bit, if he might be the person that makes room for Joaquin Phoenix, but it's wishful thinking for me too. I just really want to see it happen.
I would think that would be the case, except for literally their favorite thing with male actors is disabilities. whereas it's not with female characters. So I wonder about Marion Cotillard still, even though she seems to be safe.
She's another person who I don't really understand how she's sticking in there, because Rust and Bone isn't really getting attention otherwise, and I don't know if it's made any money.
Yeah, at least with John Hawks, you can figure, well, people are seeing it to see what the Helen Hunt situation is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've seen it, and then all of a sudden John Hawks is playing this really baity role, so...
The thing with Helen Hunt and John Hawks is I think that they're kind of... It's one of those happy balances for them, at least, maybe not for some people who don't love each performance, but... they're both keeping each other in the race, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Even though the movie didn't really take off. Although, you know, while we're talking about, you know, categories, why isn't that in Best Comedy Musical or Pleasantry?
I was shocked that it was submitted as a drama. That was to the point where I submitted my predictions column with those two predicted in comedy and then had to resubmit once I found out that it was in drama.
Mm-hmm.
It was I don't understand why. It had so much more of a claim on comedy than some of these.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's an easier category. Like, I didn't quite get it.
To say nothing of Hitchcock. Whatever.
Oh, God.
Well, yeah,
Hitchcock was
too.
Still a drama.
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, God, they did submit it as a drama, didn't they?
Which is silly because the only... It's strange, too, because Hitchcock does even try to be a comedy. Whereas some of these, you can just, like, technically, The Sessions, you could say it's only funny because the characters are sort of funny people.
Right.
But it's not actually, like, going for big laughs. But Hitchcock was actually trying to make you laugh.
Right. Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know, I realize this is getting off on a tangent. We said we were going to stay structured, but is Hitchcock over? Can we just not worry about Helen Mirren? Or is, like, she'd be my biggest bet for someone who's going to get these precursors and then not get the Oscar.
I would hope, but I think with Helen Mirren, you can never count her out. I think she's sort of taken over for Judi Dench as, you know, the automatically loved. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Naomi Watts would drop out before she would, out of pure allegiance.
The precursors have been strangely aligned in Best Actress, because Best Actress I thought was going to be super wide open. But they've been aligned absent both Emmanuel Riva and Kavanjhané Wallace.
Who I hear have been commiserating together.
Oh my god!
A week and a half.
They have so much. They have so much in common.
They're going to do a cabaret
show together.
They're going to
make a foreign language movie about that, which will win.
But I still think those two are huge Oscar contenders, and I would actually be surprised if they didn't both get nominated for the Oscar. But like the Globe-SAG axis of whatever is really saying no. It's Cotillard and Mirren and Watts.
Mm-hmm. I've been surprised by the Cotillard thing just because I think Jacques Audiard makes, you know, kind of difficult movies, even though I really like his movies. And also, she's not even the main focus of the movie, so it surprised me a little bit. But I've also heard, you know, I go to these functions or whatever, and I've also heard her name come up when I did not bring it up from people far more often than I was expecting. Like, I was talking to, you know, somebody I didn't know, but who was a member of the nominated committee on SAG, and they said I actually brought up Nicole Kidman because I was trying to put it in the air, you know.
You did not.
I did, and she was like, oh, I haven't seen that. She's like, but you know who's on my ballot, who I just think is so great. And then she went on and on about Rustin Bone and Marion Cotillard.
Interesting.
I did not see it coming, because especially after the European Film Awards and Cannes both said nah on Marion Cotillard, and you'd think those would be somewhat easier for her in terms of the content of that film.
Well, I think it tells you that more than anything is that she's becoming more Hollywood than European. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where Emmanuel Riva's nomination is going to be like, well, that's the foreign nomination.
Right.
Whereas Marion Cotillard is in a foreign language film, but she's more and more seeming like a Hollywood girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that she's like the new Sophia Loren, where it doesn't matter if it's in a foreign language or not.
Right. Or Penelope Cruz.
Right.
Yeah.
What do we think of Beasts, though? This is really, really, really interesting to me. Where it's going to fall, because like it was ineligible for SAG, so that tells us nothing. It was probably not going to be the Globe's thing.
Although, does that tell us nothing? Because they do still have to rule on those things.
What do you mean? That they didn't just give it a pass?
Yeah, I mean, it's still an industry ruling. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's true. That's definitely true. And I thought it would show up in the Globes, because I thought the narrative was hooky enough that the Hollywood Foreign Press would go for it just as a good story. Mm-hmm. And I still think it's freaking crazy that they wouldn't want Kavanjhané Wallace at the Golden Globes.
Right.
In terms of just like how fucking adorable that would be to see her hobnobbing with. And I was thinking about it because I looked, like, she would have been at the Searchlight table with Judi fucking Dench. Like, side by side would have been the fucking cutest thing ever.
We need to get you in this group.
I'm really, really, really mad.
You really have the best interests of good television in mind, which I think is what they need. Like,
I'm just saying, like, I would do them right. I would do them very, very right.
Well, yeah, and the thing, they're so weird about it, because they obviously try to choose based on television, but they're bad at it still, like the tourist thing last year. And the lack of Barbara Streisand instead of Maggie Smith this year. I'm like, Barbara would show up, Maggie will not.
Oh god, Barbara would show up. Barbara still might show up. I don't
know.
But what do we think about Beasts at the Oscars?
I still think it gets in.
I do too, because of the passion vote and the number one thing, because that is a movie that if people love it, they just love it.
Are they talking about it at your luncheons?
Not really.
Gee, that's what worries me. It's so still my favorite of all the movies that even have a shot at all, that I'm just totally biased. I just am hoping it will, but I feel like it won't.
Like, if there's a list of 10, then it's definitely in there, but it's really hard to figure out where that cutoff is going to be.
Well, I think you also have to look at which of the ones that are... like, those top five aren't going anywhere. Lincoln, Zero Dark Thirty,
Argo,
Playbook, Argo, Mez. Les Mis.
No, Life of Pi.
Well, right. Like, Life of Pi is probably in at six, but, like, because it doesn't have any presence in the acting awards, and it's sort of...
Yeah, but it's got all the tech categories.
It does. No, but I'm saying something is going to be vulnerable, I think. And it's just like figuring out which.
I feel like it might be Silver Linings.
Well, I think Silver Linings is not going to end up with the nomination count that all the other big contenders are. But I think it's probably still good for... It's probably, of those five, it's probably the most vulnerable.
Yeah, I can imagine Life of Pi jumping in ahead of Silver Linings. But
then,
like,
they...
I mean, the odds are they will both be nominated. Like, I don't think they're just going to do five this year.
Oh, no, but I just mean in terms of, like, if you're looking for what's vulnerable...
But then what's right behind Life of Pi? I kind of think it's Beast.
I do, too. But it could be Django if they really go for it. I don't think they will, but, like, who knows? Or, like, if all of a sudden there's a swell for the Master, that could be that. I don't know. I think Beast is a better contender than both of them. And I still think Amor gets in as, like...
Yeah, you too.
Ninth nomination or whatever if they go that far.
Yeah, I mean, I keep thinking Amor is still going to be in, too, but then it worries me that Emmanuel Riva has not been showing up. I realize she had more of a shot at the Oscar than any of these precursors anyways, but it's I think the Los Angeles Film Critics points to a problem, though, because the fact that even there she had to be tied with some big Hollywood, you know, star.
That's
but
true.
She still got it, though.
Well,
I mean,
true, but it just seems...
I don't feel like that
they have never
at all.
I don't know. They've never felt the need to do that before, and they've always gone left of field for Best Actress. And then suddenly they have to have Jennifer Lawrence in there. And maybe it's just because I don't think the performance is very good.
Yeah, we differ there.
Yeah, I mean, she's totally entertaining in it, but it's just, you know, I don't think, you know, she's really thinking... Anyway, we've been over this in the last podcast, but I just wish that was a more certain thing, because I think it's so far above most of the people who've just been slipping in.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like Jessica Chastain is poised just to kind of run away with Best Actress at this point, though?
I don't think
I would
so.
Be so happy if that happened.
I think it's still a pretty... I don't think anybody's poised to run away with anything in Best Actress, because I think Jennifer and Jessica will...
Duke it out.
I think they'll be very competitive because Jessica's in the movie that people are really crazy about, and Jennifer is like the new star of Hollywood, basically.
But also, a lot of people are crazy about that movie too.
Well, yeah,
just we're not us as much.
I keep forgetting that Silver Lining, because nobody's seeing it. Like it's made such a little impact, like in the box office, that I keep forgetting that there are passionate supporters.
And I
it's
feel
still
like
playing
kind of...
it. Fewer than 400 theaters.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
It's
really
in fewer theaters than
up.
Anna Karenina is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like, and what a black mark on Harvey Weinstein that he took this movie that got such a great reception at Toronto.
Yeah, such an audience reception.
Yeah, that's the thing, audience award and all that stuff, and just really fumbled this and thought, and I don't know whether he just sort of like, it's the thing where like you hug the kitten too tight, and it's just like he really tried to manage it more than... Maybe he needed to, or maybe
what
he
is
needed...
the thing where you hug the kitten?
I know, I don't even want to think about what that implies.
No,
I don't know,
like...
wasn't that a thing from Of Mice and Men? Didn't he, like, hug...
Yeah.
With bunnies.
Yeah.
Oh, you're being literary.
this is why I shouldn't be literary, because I get the fucking metaphor wrong. Anyway, now I lost my train of thought. Anyway.
No, where he overmanaged it, and he, for some reason, at the last minute, decided to make it limited, and now it just feels like... It feels like it's a flop, even though it isn't even being given the chance to be a success.
With Chastain and Lawrence, and I know their personalities don't seem to make this the case, but I wonder if this could be one of the years where, because they're both going to be making speeches at the Globes, they're both going to win the Globe.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if one of them makes one of those like really irresistible, like, oh my God, we got to, you know, we want to see that speech again.
Mm.
Well, I think it's worth
one over the other.
I think it's worth noting that even though Jessica Chastain is, her fame level's much smaller than Jennifer Lawrence's,
yes.
That she is freaking adorable in person.
Yeah,
I think that people don't really realize that, because even when the help was happening, she was really taking a back seat to Octavia and Viola.
Yeah.
But she's really adorable. And yeah, she has this rep as a serious actor, so you wouldn't necessarily think it, you know?
Yeah.
And she's already worked with every single person in Hollywood in a year's time.
You're right.
She's the David Oyelowo of actresses.
Oh my God, David Oyelowo. He is in everything.
And he's so
probably in his podcast.
He's so good.
Yeah. Maybe he'll get his nomination for The Paperboy. If it can happen for Nicole Kidman, it can happen.
I was going to say, what's going to happen when The Paperboy gets a Best Picture nomination?
John Cusack, Best Supporting Actor.
My God, I'm going to barf right here, you guys.
I'm totally kidding.
Oh, God.
You know, while we're on The Paperboy, I always, like, laugh remembering that it was going to be an Almodovar movie at one point.
That's
so, speaking of great writer-directors, we haven't talked about the screenplay category ever, so I did want to go over that because I do think it's a little bit confusing, so it would be worth getting people's opinions.
Do you think the Looper surge is real? You think it's been, I can't remember now what it's been nominated for, but it like won a couple critics' prizes, and it's been making more lists than anybody expected. That would be fun.
Well, I mean, I do think that there's room for... I mean, I think it's pretty safe an original screenplay that Zero Dark Thirty, Amour, Moonrise Kingdom, and The Master seem pretty safe to me.
Me too.
But then you've also got Django's an easy get if people are feeling like they want Quentin around this year.
Yeah.
and
if they want him to come to their parties.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you've also got, you know, a bunch of smaller things like Looper, Seven... Psychopaths, Flight, where you could imagine certain pockets of people being like, I'm voting for that, you know? So I don't know.
I would be shocked if Seven Psychopaths showed up. I know it's very, like, insidery. It's a writing movie about writers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm projecting because I found it so unpleasant.
But Martin McDonagh has had a pretty good track record with awards.
He has.
Yeah, but he had Focus Features behind the last one, and this is CBS Films, which barely knows what it's doing yet. Despite,
and I feel like there was way more love for In Bruges than there was
way
than
more definitely
Seven Psychopaths.
But he is an Oscar winner.
Yep.
Well, yeah.
But it was a short film. Like that doesn't count.
Yeah, I think it does. It just shows that they're not opposed to him at all.
Well, they're not opposed.
Well,
to him.
Andrea Arnold is an Oscar winner also.
Oh, good point, good point. And nobody's talking about Wuthering Heights.
No.
Even Andrea Arnold.
Yeah, I think that fifth slot is pretty wide open, although I would probably say it's Django with Looper sort of lurking behind.
I'm not as certain that The Master has the spot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's having this much trouble getting loved by
everybody
else.
Hate it. They could just hate it, give it nothing, so yeah.
Well, because, I mean, and its writing is not the thing that most people wind up talking about. Like, you talk about the cinematography and the music and the performance mm-hmm. as well before you talk about the writing.
Well, if that's the case, then is it going to be something like Flight, or is it going to be something more outre, like Looper?
I can't imagine it being Flight.
I really can't either.
I would be bummed as hell if it was
Flight. I hated that script. But, I mean, that's just me. Apparently mm-hmm. other people love it.
When you say outre, do you mean something like Hyde Park on Hudson, having no storyline or motivation or point of view or consistency or genre choices? Because that was pretty experimental.
It's not a super deep bench in terms of nominatable things. Like, it just Brave did not catch on at all this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess I could see Rust and Bone if they really, really like Cotillard enough that they want to give her coattails. But... I don't know. Nobody's talking about The Guilt Trip.
That's true. I mean, like, this of these lists are just what's eligible. It's not even what has any traction.
It'd be fun to see Bachelorette get in there, seriously.
God. That's my quest this year, is just make people at least see it.
I
have your opinion on it one way or another, but just see it, people.
I watched it at Sundance and hated it, and then I saw it again because I'd heard that they'd recut it, and it was such a more pleasant experience. I was really amazed by what a big difference that made.
That's really interesting.
I don't even know if it exists anymore. It's a very weird experience to see something change. And I don't even know if they recut it that much. I think it's just like music choices and like editing choices, like really like simple stuff that made a huge difference. Anyway, I'm more of a fan than I was before.
Who's the screenwriter on Magic Mike? Is it?
It's Channing Tatum's buddy.
It's the guy, it's the guy who was dating Cody Horn in the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, then that doesn't...
I forget what his job was in the movie, but it was something like...
If you put Django in for Flight, you kind of have your five.
I think that's probably... most likely.
Whereas Adapted seems not only kind of messy to me, but there's so many movies like Bernie and Beasts that feel like original screenplays and aren't. And sometimes that does seem to make a difference to people.
The Sessions also.
Yeah. I mean, this feels like a... I kind of think Bernie might get in here.
That would be fun.
At the expense of The Sessions?
At the expense of The Sessions or Beasts. Like, I don't think that the writing of Beasts is what people talk about when they talk about it either.
But this is also the spot where you cannot, like, where that indie movie that is having a tougher time otherwise can show up.
And then there's also like the big, more traditional choices like Life of Pi.
Perks of Being a Wallflower. That's shown up in critics' lists so much more than I thought it would, and in
the screenplay is also written by the book's original author. I don't know if that will matter to the writers, but.
Right. Does Anna Karenina being written by Tom Stoppard give it any leg up here, or does that not matter in Oscar terms?
I feel like it just hasn't landed.
I love that movie.
I do too, but it just hasn't. It hasn't landed, and I feel like Tom Stoppard's a giant in, you know, the theater, and even with Shakespeare in Love, like I just feel like it's not like he sort of crossed over and became, you know, this presence in film screenwriting.
Mm-hmm. We need to wrap up, I know, because Katie's got to run, but I'll blame Katie this time.
Yeah.
That sounded totally wrong.
Call me out, man.
But I want to talk briefly about cinematography and art direction, because I have two little things going on here that I always think are interesting, if maddening. And one is cinematography, for a long time now, with Oscar, has been going to special effects movies, which I can't quite wrap my head around, and this year I think it could easily go to Life of Pi. Then we also have the problem, which we have talked about before, that where cinematography and art direction, they are completely different arts, and often people get credit for the other thing than what their art is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if we could have discussion of those categories and where your passions lie this year.
I'm not a cinematographer. Surprise.
It's not one of your many skills.
It's not one of my many skills. I don't know. I feel like with something like Life of Pi, and granted, I really, really loved it, the special effects, I think, were great. Without great cinematography, they don't look as good. You know what I mean? Like, you can say that, like, it's getting credit for its great special effects. The special effects sometimes, you know, just won't look as great if you don't know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I feel like Life of Pi really creates some really beautiful images, and it's not just on a, like, computer virtuosity level. I think everything in the boat is just gorgeous. Little moments, maybe even more so than the big, like, whatever, like, bioluminescent whales, that kind of thing. I don't know, it's probably not at the top of my list for cinematography, but it's up there. I thought it was just...
I think about the opening credits and the zoo as a really strong argument for the cinematography. It's so beautiful. Yeah. I think even if you just watch the beginning of the movie, you might be swayed by it. But I'm excited by, is it Grieg? How do you say the cinematographer of Zero Dark Thirty's name? Can I say Greg Fraser, even though there's a bunch of extra eyes in there? like, the more I learned about how they lit that movie, like, especially the raid on Osama bin Laden's compound, like, there's really interesting stuff going on there. And it's, like, it's all very digital, and it's very modern, and it would be super interesting to see that going up against, like, Janusz Kaminski, who's lighting, you know, like, milky white light coming through the windows of the White House.
Right.
But then we've also, even though I think that the movie, to me at least, seems dead in terms of Oscar... given their preferences for Batman over the years, we could see Wally Pfister again for The Dark Knight Rises.
I think the fact that he won for Inception makes that a little less likely. That narrative almost seems like it's been paid off.
I think all the hoopla for 70mm for The Master may count for something with this group. But I also see that, whatever. I'm looking at Danny Cohen and feeling depressed, so I haven't seen the movie, but you know, Tim Robey has christened this Sturgeon Vision, his way of shooting movies.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, for as much as I did really like Les Mis with reservations, but the cinematography is not the thing I would single out in that at all. And isn't cinematography one of the categories where they will just throw something, regardless of buzz, regardless of traction, regardless of whatever, which I always really like about the cinematographers. And
I think they go really back and forth about that.
Yeah,
I
they
think
do.
There are years where they do that really strongly, and then there are years where they are like, The King's Speech was very good, or like Shakespeare in Love, which is a classic example of the like cinematography art direction confusion. Like nothing's really happening in the lighting of that movie. It's fine, but
speaking of cinematography art direction, do we think Moonrise Kingdom has a shot?
For cinematography would be really confusing. I think the art direction is a stronger thing, but I can't really figure out what's special about the cinematography of Moonrise Kingdom.
I just mean that I feel like, well, if since we're talking about, you know, the conflation of the two, it's such a strong presence in art direction, and since they seem, you know, people really seem to love this movie this year.
Conflate them, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But I think about, I also wonder, I mean, it has had no campaign that I could see at all, but I still wonder about Prometheus in a couple of those categories, just because the visuals are what people responded to. And it does have, like, name people working on it.
It does.
When you say the visuals, you mean Michael Fassbender, though, right?
Well, he couldn't even get nominated for the Critics' Choice Action, so who knows?
And obviously, the Paperboy is in this category as well.
All that. For
your consideration, in all categories.
That's makeup for all that sweat in the Paperboy.
And not a coincidence that they added the hairstyling this year, I think. I think if Beast of the Southern Wild can't get a cinematography nomination, we have a problem.
I agree with you, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It could get score, though. Is that
I actually think that's so much less likely than people keep talking about.
Score?
Yeah, because it's not, again, the problem that Beast will have, even if it doesn't have it enough to keep it from nominations, is it's a completely an outsider movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of those branches are very, very insular.
Yeah.
So, like, especially, like I've done studies on this, the music branch is more insular than any other in terms of not giving newbie nominations.
Right.
Well, if John Williams wins for score, I will punch something. Well, I mean,
Desplat's got, I need to update this because I know he's not eligible for Moonrise, which I predicted. yeah, but obviously, like, my predictions have to change because they've changed eligibilities. But I can never figure out what they're doing there in terms of eligibility. Sometimes it's, you know...
I'm surprised that Beasts even got eligible. I don't know why it would have been made ineligible, other than the fact that I feel like every time I love a score, it is...
Well, they don't usually go for two composers, right? Isn't that
right.
Something?
Well, right. Well, there's that, plus it's the director, and they don't usually go for directors composing.
And that Beasts and Cloud Atlas both got eligible... for multiple composers, and those are my two favorite scores of the year. So,
yeah.
So, which means none will get nominated.
Just to break your heart.
Yeah, there's.
There'll
I mean,
be
there's
five John Williams nominations and none for the ones I like.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the eligibility list, I think Danny Elfman has four shots, and Desplat has three, and James Newton Howard has three, I think.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of names that they really always go for that have lots of possibilities. You know, weep for people if they're putting their eggs in the Beast's basket. Although I completely agree.
Don't pity me.
It's not pity, it's sympathy.
Oh, it's so good. I've listened to it probably once a week since that movie came out.
The Beast score?
Yeah.
That's going to be that one you're going to start hearing in trailers.
Oh, for real. Absolutely.
It's going to be everywhere.
Can we talk about how great my scoring of this podcast has been with all the coughing?
Really?
I thought that was David Oyelowo. That was you?
He just vanished into the role.
He became whooping cough.
It's like Bjork's experimental all vocal album.
Yeah.
I'm just doing only vocal sounds for y'all.
Exactly.
I'm now looking at David Oyelowo to figure out how many movies he's in next year. Which the answer is a lot. Everybody.
He's great.
is my parting observation is that I think, are we all just too devastated by the fact that Matthew McConaughey's not getting nominated for stuff that we couldn't
see? No,
I'm holding on to it. I'm holding on to it with both hands.
I'm
not giving up.
I am too.
I'm the only one still predicting against him, which I've been worried about the whole year.
This is why I am so mad at Alan Arkin. Like, I just feel like he's taking up space in a role that is fine. Yeah, De Niro especially, too. At least De Niro is, like, kind of having a comeback, whereas Alan Arkin has just been doing this ever since he was.
But I love that De Niro's getting credit for, like, not sucking.
Yeah.
It's like, yay, he doesn't suck.
Right.
And, you know, is it really, like, something that's best, his performance?
No.
That feels like a rhetorical question.
and he gets overshadowed by the stars in his movie. And, like, there's just so many reasons. I don't know. I'm hoping Arkin or De Niro or both get left off. I feel like supporting actor is so competitive. And it also is going to be really, really strange if they end up with five former winners. If they do the SAG list and it's five former winners. Because I know I will keep this very brief. I was emailing about this with Nick a little while ago about how if Anne Hathaway wins for Les Mis, that makes the 2008 Best Actress lineup like the sixth or whatever all winners Best Actress lineup of all time, and it's only happened never with Best Supporting Actor, I believe is what I found.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would be the only time ever that a category went in with five former winners if they SAG lineup ever that it went in with all five having already won.
So somebody
in any acting category.
So somebody's getting their second, you know, win.
Period. Right. But you look at like when it happened in Best Actor in 2002, where it was Adrian Brody up against four former winners, and all of a sudden he's the surprise winner. If you end up with four former winners and like McConaughey,
oh my god,
my money's on McConaughey.
Oh my god, that would make me happy.
I'm just saying. There's no strong narrative among any of those former winners
Tommy Lee Jones
is at the head of the pack, I think, by default right now. And I think very easily see him winning. But it's not like that's a strong, like, that's such a huge, like, story there. And I feel like...
It's not the nomination they might feel that, comfortable being like, okay, we've recognized him now.
Somebody would really go far with it. Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, even if, and I don't think this is what's going to happen, but if you end up with the four guys we all expect, Arkin, Hoffman, De Niro, and Tommy Lee Jones, and even, like, DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I don't think DiCaprio's that good in the movie, but I think he's got a great shot at winning then.
He clearly wins in that configuration. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be super interested to see DiCaprio win for that role. I have mixed feelings about it, too, but it's, like, it's really fascinating when really famous people win their first Oscars for supporting, which is what Anne Hathaway's going to do, too.
Well, and it's so George Clooney and Sirianni.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kate Blanchett.
Right.
Yeah. Well, in Clooney, they so jumped the gun where they had,
they were worried about not giving him an Oscar, and they didn't need to be.
And who knew that he would be nominated three more times? And Lord knows whether he would have been able, to win one of the...
He would have won for The Descendants.
For The Descendants. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. So, I don't know. Who knows? But I think it's funny that supporting actor has two, you know, multiple paths to get five former winners, because it's not only Bardem, it's also Christoph Waltz. That's right.
Yeah.
Although that is hilarious to call him a supporting actor.
Christoph, I know. I thought they decided to make him lead. I like had
they did decide, and then all of a sudden they were back.
Yeah.
So why would they want DiCaprio and Waltz competing? And they're totally screwing over Samuel Jackson.
Who was the best one in the movie?
Yeah, I agree.
I think they saw Waltz do really well in those early critics awards, and was like, "Well, this is our best shot." And I think they got nervous that people just weren't going to.
Waltz is super entertaining in that movie, but it is
not that challenging.
It's weird
to say Christoph Waltz doing Christoph Waltz, but that's what it feels like.
No, it's the role as Hans Landa, but with less interesting stuff.
Yeah,
he is that giant tooth bouncing on top of his wagon. Like that's the appeal to that character.
Good call.
I like that, along with strangling the kitten. Those are what's going on.
There will never again be strangling kittens on my podcast. I just need to warn you.
That's what I get for trying.
Okay, well, thanks, y'all. Thanks, everyone, for coming.
Oh, God, go feel better, please.
I know. I don't actually feel that bad. It's just like the cough won't go away.
Yeah.
You're just going to be sick until Nicole Kidman gets nominated, aren't you?
It's like I'm on tenterhooks, yeah.
You're on a whooping cough strike.
That's right.
And if she doesn't get nominated everyone is going to have to pee on me to get rid of the infection.
I didn't want to bring up Mila Kunis, but I do feel like she might be the Mila Kunis of this year.
But Mila Kunis was in a movie that everybody saw. Like the crazy outsider fighting her way in.
Yeah, my hope is that since supporting actress is kind of strange,
it is
that people who hadn't watched The Paperboy would have stuck it in out of curiosity. But like, I keep hearing these weird things about Nicole in that movie. That's my hope.
I don't know if putting in the movie is actually her best chance.
I don't know, though, even if you turn off the movie early, you're still left with a very strong impression of her.
It's true.
That's true. Which is also true of Anne Dowd.
Yeah.
Whose best scene, I think, is the beginning.
And because she's the lead actress in that movie, so there's a ton of there.
I think I'm going to predict Anne Dowd, I feel like. I just think that's...
Although, are people really more likely to watch Compliance than The Paperboy?
Oof.
I think possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, but The Paperboy has stars in it. Like, literally that, when I went to go see it, I was like, well, it's got famous people. They should be interesting to watch.
And there's a car crash aspect to what everybody's hearing about The Paperboy. I feel like Compliance, there's more of a split opinion on it. I know there were people who really hated it, evidenced by this collection of wonderful people here. But I think that it got enough... really, really good review that it's not just people who are looking to see how bad it is.
I also think it implies that you're learning something about America or confronting an important theme when you watch it. Like, it gives itself some of that credit, so that if you're having to, like, stick out through something you're finding uncomfortable and you're an Academy voter, I imagine you're going to do that before you're going to watch The Paperboy.
Right.
And fine, you're all just trying to break my heart.
Aw.
Well, and the thing is, I love both of those performances, but, you know. It's just, going to be weird to see if Anne Dowd happens to see, she's in, like, every frame almost.
But I would love to see her get in there, so I'll accept it.
Well, on that note of acceptance, all about accepting.
Good talk, everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we nailed that one.
We landed, as Joe Reed would say. And I was here with Katie Rich from Cinema Blend.
Thank you for having me.
Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
I said it's nickunchained.com.
And Joe Reed.